I've always been traveling, except for during COVID, 200 cities a year. And I don't like to be bored. I like to think of things to do. My grandma always said, you know, only stupid people get bored because smart people think of things to do. So there was this period of time, because I wake up early, that was dead time for me. I finished my workout, my meditation, and nobody really wanted to meet me at 7 a.m. So I decided one day in Baltimore that I'd just send out a message, hey, anybody that needs help, come meet me. I'll buy you breakfast. I usually stay at like the Homewoods, where breakfast is free, by the way. So two people showed up, and it was this really cool experience. People were asking me, what would you do, could you do, should you do, can you help me this way, or who do you know? And to me, it was one of the most fulfilling hours in a day. So after that, I made a non-negotiable promise that every city I went to, I would volunteer an hour of my time to help people, whatever that looks like. And so these became meetups as my community grew into the millions. And we've had hundreds of people in Times Square. We've been kicked out of hotel lobbies. But the interesting thing is, being chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute, is that I have a perspective and learn lessons that most people wouldn't have an opportunity to learn, which is, what are people around the world listening for? And one of the capabilities I have is research. I started my career after law school in legal research. I'm a person who preaches being more interested than interesting. And so I take the clues and the patterns, and I do research to help facilitate the answers to help ease what people are listening for around the world. And so as much as I personally love this, I want to thank you for doing this, because I will learn more and get more from it than anyone. And so your participation is all I ask for. I was saying 0 to 1 is harder than 1 to 100, especially in questions. It's been my experience. People who don't ask questions will definitely be the people when I want to leave that follow me out going, hold on, I got a question for you. Just ask it here, much easier for both of us. So ask me anything. I think that is self-explanatory. Let's get started. Who has the first question? Please. That's fine.
Do you mind if I say
that? No, you do whatever you want.
Because I just want to give this man his flowers while he's living. A year ago, I stood here, and I was very challenged because my oldest son had passed away in his sleep, and he was 29 years young. I drove in a storm to get here, and David loved on me, Penny, who has become a friend. So 1 year later, I will share, I'm proud to say at 62 years young, I tatted my son, and he's behind my heart. I am loving everyone to life, and when he preaches, he speaks what his heart really means, and everyone talks a good game, but the lessons to blessings are real, and I am here to share my tremendous attitude of gratitude for you and just say I love you.
I love you too. Thank you. That's awesome. Thank you very much. All right. Questions? Anyone? Yes.
For events like this, what are the best ways each one of us can get the best out of this event by asking you the right questions?
Yeah. So this is something I love to touch upon, because it's confusing to a lot of people. I pay $1,200 a month in California for a storage facility full of banker's boxes. It has Tony Robbins shit, Wayne Dyer shit, Greg Braden shit. It has college, law school, business school, honorary degrees. I didn't need any banker's boxes for. But it's just full of shit that I can't access, and I'm storing and paying for it. And the reason is I thought, when I was told to be more interested than interesting, that I should write down everything. And there's two types of people, those who write down too much and those that write down too little or nothing. Either way, you're in the same boat. The people who write down too little, at least you save the money. So good for you. What you should be getting out of everything in life is to have a system to capture what resonates with you. Right? So many things out there are about feelings. You just don't know it. There's so many great thought leaders that talk about the feeling of it. And remember, intuition doesn't have time. If you don't believe me, go to a craps table and get, oh shit, heart eight, and you bet heart eight, and then it's not heart eight, but 3 rolls later, it's heart eight, and you're like, shit, I'll bet again, heart eight. No, because intuition has no time. It's infinite in its time. Intuition or feeling says, this is going to be important to you, so I'm getting your attention. The infinite is getting your intention through intuition. Bam, this is important. Pay attention, moron. And so have a system to capture that which resonates with you. And that which resonates with you is not just something that makes you feel good. I was with, I think some of you in Chicago, and one of my friends said, my mom told me, David, that you're either humble or you're about to be. And it hit me like thunder and lightning. I'm like, oh, that is, I'm texting myself, emailing myself. I captured that lesson and have told it a million times. You're either humble or you're about to be. And I'm still being taught that lesson as I found out when my mom passed and thought I could handle it. That I'm either humble or I'm about to be. But what I really learned throughout the process as well is when I strongly disagree with something is equally important to paying attention to. So when I see something or hear something that I'm like, man, that is the dumbest effing thing. That aggravates me. That I write it down. I write it down. I do research. I learn about it. I try to be empathetic to it. I understand it better. I'm looking for the appreciation of the differences that are so strongly held in my feelings that that doesn't make any sense to me. And that's where the lessons, the journey of the human experience exists, in capturing that which resonates with you, then creating a system to access those. I have a capture folder. It's in Outlook. Every Sunday, I take a minimum of an hour and I study my capture folder and I tie lessons and stories to the intuition that I had. Knowing it's just a matter of time, just a matter of time until I know why I'm receiving this information. And so what you should be getting out of it is capturing what resonates with you. The shit that you don't agree with heavily or you agree with, write it down, capture it, figure out how to access it. Just a matter of time until it's gonna help you create what you want and desire. This is the infinite working for you, through you. And it's, once again, probably the biggest practice I have that would have saved me money too. I'm still trying to throw away those boxes, but my wife calls me a hoarder. By the way, she called me a hoarder. We went through shit in my garage. I think I told Penny this because we had a coaching call that day. She's like, look at this shit right here. You need to throw this away. I'm like, that is freaking my Clemente collection. I represented Roberto Clemente, and a lot of times they couldn't afford to pay me, so they'd give me like a bat, right? And I have like one of the biggest Roberto Clemente. I'm like, that's my son's retirement. I'm not hoarding it. This looks like shit to me. Anyway. One man's shit is another woman's treasure. Yeah.
So, Dave, I got a question jotted down, though. What's the most important habit or belief that helped you step fully into your identity as a thought leader, not just an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so for me, they're closely tied together, and it's faith. You know, it's interesting. I'm on that Aspire business tour and blessed to be on it, and I get the most compliments that I intertwine faith into entrepreneurship. And understanding when there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary to where you want to be, to still move forward, right? When the evidence is not there or it's contrary to where you want to be able to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of what you desire and learning from that, that is entrepreneurship, but it's also faith. If there's one skill set beyond the desire that you must be what you can be, which is inherently reconciled within the context of faith, it's just faith itself. Because if you're an entrepreneur and understand the thousand steps that it takes to be a successful entrepreneur, what do I mean by that? There's a thousand steps. I don't care what business you're in, there's a thousand steps to get you to where you want to be or better in business. Here's why most of you won't make it. Because it takes 90% of everything you got, effort, time, emotion, money, value, 90% of everything that you can muster to get you to 250 steps. Takes you 90% of the time that it's going to take you to be successful to get to 250 steps. So human nature tells us there's no evidence. The evidence is contrary to where we want to be. I am going to quit. Everyone around me is telling me that I should quit, that I'm wasting my time. Everything around me is telling me I should quit. and waste your time. And it doesn't mean that your original idea is the one that you stick with, right? LLCs or entities does not mean that you quit if you change LLCs and entities. I have multiple LLCs and entities. Sports One Marketing became Dave Meltzer Enterprises. Why? Because of COVID, right? Because of COVID. Every single of my whole business, multi-global sports marketing business with Warren Moon, stopped in one day because Super Bowl, Pro Bowl, Masters, Kentucky Derby, Breeders' Cup, ESPYs, Emmys, Oscars, and Grammys, where I had millions of dollars of deposits, were canceled. And my business was bring all the celebrities, athletes, entertainers, billionaires, millionaires, and entrepreneurs to those events to raise money for charity and make money for us. And it ended. So I said, oh, perfect. Not a big deal, right? Take my skills, my knowledge, and my desire, align it to what's doing well now, what's stable now, and what I think is going to do well, and we'll rename it. I didn't quit on Sports One Marketing. I expanded my skills, knowledge, and desire into what's doing well, what's stable, and what I think is doing well. Even though there's no evidence, evidence was contrary to where I thought I wanted to be or better. But where I want to be or better isn't defined by a quantitative analysis. It's defined by acceleration, aggregation, and compounding of outcomes with faith that I'm going to be somewhere better than I thought. I just don't know it because I'm human and I'm not infinite. After I'm done with the human experience, I'll be infinite. So in the measure, faith in this thousand steps. So remember, here's the sad thing. 90% of the time it'll take you to get to 250 steps. I know it'll take 1,000 steps to get to where I want to be in every business entrepreneur journey I'm in. It's only 5% of the time to get me to 500 steps. And it's only 5% more of the time to get me to 1,000. The saddest thing is 99% of the people quit at 250. 99% of the 1% quit at 500, right? And another 99% of the 1% quit before they get to 1,000, even though it's just a short amount of time. And every great entrepreneur that you meet will tell you, it was amazing. I was on my last dollar. But little do they know that I deal with thousands of entrepreneurs. And if you're an entrepreneur, you're always on your last dollar. So you're commonplace. Of course you're going to make it, because there's only one thing that determines a business. So in human experience, I taught you, right? The only thing that determines the end of your human experience is the heart stopping. The only thing that determines your business from stopping is no money. So make sure your priority is that you have enough money to be in business tomorrow, then you'll always be in business. Make sure that you always know you have enough money to be in business tomorrow first, and you'll always be in business, and you'll get to 1,000 steps. Perfect. By the way, a lot of you are members of our private networking coaching group. Please, if you have any interest, we would love to have you in there, and appreciate those who are in that group, because it's growing and been extremely valuable to me. But more importantly,
well, you
speaking.
Answered my question in so many ways, but I was thinking, like, when your intuition's clear, but the practical side of the day-to-day, do you still think about the practical side, or are you so dropped into your intuition that you just do one step in front of the other?
Yeah, no, I'm extremely dropped into the practical side, especially on the non-negotiable behavior. Right, so 90% of your success will come from the non-negotiable behavior. Only 10% of the success will come from this circumstantial behavior that we have, thinking that you know what you know, even though you don't know what you don't know, and you should know that you don't know what you don't know. I stick to very, very disciplined, pragmatic, non-negotiable, 8 hours of sleep, 4 hours of awake, non-negotiables of family, finance, faith, health, and time and relativity study. And then the other ones I know is less impactful in my life, but it allows me, having 12 hours of awake time and having the 8 hours of the 12 hours of awake time doing what I want, and knowing that it's just a matter of pursuing my potential, that I don't know what I don't know, actually allows me to enjoy the non-negotiable, consistent behavior that annoys me. And by the way, a lot of people ask me, what do you do when you don't want to do a non-negotiable? Has anybody ever woken up and not wanted to work out? Has anybody like woke up and not want to go to school or wherever it is? Drive carpools, anybody? So I created this duplicative rule, and it works two ways. It's called the Michael Jordan rule. Does everyone know who Michael Jordan is? That's why I use him as my rule. Okay, good. If I don't want to work out in the morning and I wake up, I simply say, dude, you got to go work out. Michael Jordan is working out with you today. And if I say, fuck, if Michael Jordan was going to work out with me today, I definitely would be working out. If Michael Jordan's driving this carpool with me, definitely drive the carpool. So if Michael Jordan is the reason I would do it, then that's not the reason I should be doing it. So it readjusts for the sake of what am I doing it. Because obviously for the sake of something, I would do it. So is my family and support more important than me driving the carpool with Michael Jordan? Hell yeah. So then all of a sudden I convince myself, trick myself, whatever you want to say, that Michael Jordan. Now it works the other way. And we can say this because all of you are here. So when I invite people to Melville for a mastermind or a VIP dinner and they say, oh no, you know, sorry, my dog ate my homework and I'm not able to make it, I immediately tell them, oh, that's too bad because Michael Jordan's going to be there. Oh, shit. Sorry, man. I'm really sorry your dog ate your homework. So it works both ways, by the way, to let people understand for the sake of what and evaluate it and prioritize according to what is important to them. Working out is important to me, not because Michael Jordan's working out with me. It's important to me because I want to live a long, healthy, wealthy, happy life. And working out's a big part of that. Awesome. Yes. Then Brett? Yeah. He's going to get revenge. I made fun of him on my last interview.
Oh, no.
He's old friend. He wasn't smiling.
Aww. I first learned about you watching Entrepreneur Elevator Pitch.
Yeah.
And I'm a professor over at St. John's University. I invented a stretching bar called Shape Stretch. And I got asked to try out for Entrepreneur Elevator Pitch, and I chickened out.
Oh.
Fear took over. But then I did try out for 2-Minute Drill, and I was just on season 6. I don't know if you remember me.
I do.
Stretch body.
Yeah.
But the time between being afraid to go on the first show and going on the second show, listening to the weekly talks and the the online podcast and stuff motivated me to eliminate some of that fear. So my question is, as we all in here are probably successful in our own ways, when new opportunities or endeavors come, there's always an element of fear. How do you overcome fear to move forward with new things when you know you already have that vault, that bank, that that lifestyle that maybe you already want, but something is pushing you?
Sure.
And for me, it's learning, as I told you. You know?
Yeah, not to be repetitive as well, but fear is omnipresent. It's never going to go away. So if you're afraid of going on the show, you're always going to be afraid of going on the show. And you're reacting to that fear in a different way according to the circumstances of the day and where you are in the meaning you gave your past. So that reaction could be a feeling of being inferior, separate, anxious, guilty, worried. All these different feelings are actually that reaction to the fear, whatever it is, why you don't want to come on a show. And mostly people will try to outlogic it, analyze it, and that actually will actually create resistance, and resistance creates acceleration in the wrong direction. And so this is exactly what I talk about, is to look for the clues and the patterns, not about what you're afraid of how do I respond and react to fear, react and respond to fear.
Or walk on fire,
break a board with your mind.
Yeah.
Or a rebar in your throat, like Marissa did, right?
Yeah.
Marissa did that. And then, so what I want you to do is, let's have a different relationship with fear and the reaction to fear. And understand that when we have the response of anxiety, worry, anger, frustration, separate, inferior, that's when we apply what? Stop, drop, and roll. So we are going to go ahead and just take fear for what it is. We're not going to overcome fear. Right? I've jumped out of a plane from the time I went up on the plane, before the plane, everything, till when I jumped off the plane, I was afraid. I just changed the response to that fear. And I gave it what I needed to be aligned with what I wanted to do, which was I wanted not to limit myself. I wanted to be prepared. I took all the lessons, right? I wanted to be prepared. I didn't just go fucking jump out of a plane. That's stupid. But now people do that, right? They think, oh, I'm brave as shit. No, you're stupid. That's different. Right? Like that 14-year-old that drives NASCARs, he's well prepared, way better than we are. He's not just jumping in a car going 180 miles an hour this far from another car. He's well prepared. And so in that, remember, preparation practice does two things. It gives you comfort and confidence. So if you are not comfortable or confident, then practice, prepare until you are. Perceived value is only based off of comfort and confidence, by the way, right? Why I can get so much money to speak? Because I'm comfortable and confident in telling people I'm 100 grand. Do I always get 100 grand? No, because I know my bottom line. I'll go different places with different people in different circumstances. But bottom line is just a matter of what is it worth doing? That's math, right? I know both, by the way, before we get into any type of transaction together. I know my perceived value. I know what I'm comfortable and confident in articulating that value to exceed what I'm asking for, but I also know my bottom line. So when the person says, please, please, can you come, please, but we only have this much money, I will say no. Not because I don't love you, not because it's just not worth it to me. I've already done the value justification for me. I have my own family, my own opportunity costs, my time, you know, my energy, I just can't do it. Too many people in big areas of their life don't know their perceived value. They don't practice articulating the quantitative value to exceed what they're asking for to a level of confidence and comfortability, and they don't know their bottom line. So they get caught into this terrible feeling called what? Guilt. Oh, he really needs it more than me. Oh, you know what? I love all of those people in Melville. Right, I can afford to do it, and oh, they're gonna think that if I don't do it, that you know I'm not who I say I am because all I am is about the no. It's not about the money; it's about what it's worth to do. Right, it's like Super Bowl tickets with my family. They're always like, "Hey, can you get me two tickets to the Super Bowl?" Sure, but let me let you know that I can give you these two tickets, but I also could sell them for $10,000 each. So in essence, I'm giving you $20,000, and if that is okay with you, I'm okay giving it. That's knowing my bottom line in the relativity, association, feeding and bleeding of that relationship. So it's really important in all of your dealings to know your perceived value, whether it's going on a show, but also know your blind. What's it worth it to go on 2-minute drill, elevator pitch, go fund yourself, whatever it is? Brett.
No revenge today.
All right. We're going to play the long game on that. Like my favorite episode of MASH, right? When it doesn't come.
First, I just want to thank you. Since we worked together, I have been saying thank you, bookending my days, and it's changed my life. Being a student of my calendar changed my life and helped me change a lot of my clients and friends and family's lives as well. So a lot of gratitude for those things. My question is actually about sleep, because that's my biggest performance inhibitor, and obviously it's a huge priority for you. So what tangible strategies do you have that you utilize that could be applied quickly and effectively?
Yeah, so the best and easiest one is called an unwinding routine. So my tomorrow starts tonight. So in my non-negotiable plan is what time am I going to unwind, knowing how long it takes from me putting my mind, body, and soul in a position to recover and access information, energy, intuition, and intelligence, to when I'm actually asleep. So I'm putting myself in that position. And so I reverse engineer that according to the time zones. I have a little cheating help with my coach, but regardless, I have an unwinding routine, and it's usually at 9 p.m. Pacific time, which puts me in deep sleep by 9:30 Pacific time. So that'd be 12:30 here. I cheat an hour when I go to Europe, and then it becomes a reversal when I go to Asia, because I do travel, but I have a coach to tell me how to do that. But they always have an unwinding routine. The biggest mistake that people do is they don't understand that an unwinding routine is literally like warming up for sleep. Like, you would not go and do a 100-meter sprint at 57 years old without stretching, because you would definitely tear a hamstring or an Achilles tendon, I promise you, every 57-year-old. You're not going to a full sprint. Well, that's what people do every night, right? They go to bed at night and wake up more tired in the morning and never ask themselves why. It'd be like eating lunch, all of us, for 2 hours, and then all of us leaving here going, man, I'm starving, and not going, well, what? That's weird. I just ate a shitload and I'm starving. That's the same thing with sleep, except for sleep has way more impact than lunch. And so an unwinding routine is a matter of understanding all the things that would interfere with your mind, body, and soul being at peace or at rest to put yourself in a position for deep sleep and REM. Depending on what your sleep coach says, you should have a minimum. It's not the hours that you sleep. You should have a minimum of an hour of deep sleep and REM sleep every night. I'll sleep sometimes a minimum of 5 hours, but my REM will be 2 hours and my deep sleep will be 2 hours, which allows me to recover and access information in a shorter amount of time, which makes me more efficient, effective, and statistically successful. So what are some of the things that are interfering with the unwinding? Conversations with your spouse. That's number one. Why is it that anyone that has an intimate relationship, they think the best time to bring up, how are we going to afford blank? Is at 8:59. Yeah, whatever you want to, I'm serious. Or if they think that watching The Housewives before you go to bed is somehow going to help you unwind, especially if you're married, like these are stupid things that people do. Temperature. Right? If you're hot going to bed, turn down the goddamn air conditioning. For me, it's 67 degrees. I have a 8 sleep bed. If anybody wants to learn about it, it is the greatest device for sleeping ever created. By far, EIGHT, sleep. It's a cover that goes over your mattress. Extreme technology. It will move your head, move your feet, makes hundreds of adjustments while you sleep. Temperature for his and hers. Anyone that has menopause, I will guarantee the best solution for menopause in the entire world. It's why I bought it, because my friends were telling me how great it was. And then I went to dinner with Chad Sandergren, who's selling me on the 8 sleep bed, and his wife, it's like, yeah, when he bought it, I told him to save the box because they guarantee it for 30 days. And she said, after the first night, I threw the box away. It was the first good, as a 50-something-year-old woman, it was incredible. But temperature, position, light, blue light and regular light, like all of these things help you unwind and also can help you awake in the right way. And so not everybody needs a sleep coach. Right? I would not have a sleep coach but for I travel 200 days a year and I need this adjustment. If I was sleeping at home, I wouldn't need it anymore, a sleep coach. But I would have and keep doing research on sleep. Is that helpful?
Yeah, very.
Good. So do I nap? Only if my sleep coach tells me I should take one. Or if I've somehow gone off of a pattern where I'm sitting watching golf while my wife's TikToking and boom, I fall asleep. But there is napping techniques. Einstein used to do it, so I don't know if any of you do this, but you could hold a pen. So when my sleep coach tells me I need a nap, let's say it's 3 o'clock, which is normally when she'll tell me that because of what happened from travel or whatever, I'll hold a pen, put myself into the unwinding routine, and let go of the pen. If it doesn't wake me, I'll go. If it does, you actually can get a lot of recovery quicker by putting yourself into a quick deep sleep.
Question?
Yep.
So you just talked about, we were talking about sleep, right? How important.
Do I need to record your question?
I'm close enough.
All right, cool.
So you talk a lot about unwinding, and then you made a small little mention about the subtleties of waking up the REM. Can you walk me through that process? In kind of respect to the same question, what are those main subtleties that
light and temperature? So obviously sound too. So I never use an alarm. So light and temperature. The one thing about the 8 sleep that I love so much is it warms up the bed, which helps you wake up. But the main thing is mindset. I mean, how many of you wake up, and when you wake up, are you saying, oh shit, or oh wow, right? I'm a oh wow. Like I literally wake up and I'm like, damn, this is gonna be awesome every day. And then I say thank you and I start putting myself into the gratitude practice in the morning. Then I go ahead, and meditate. So anybody here meditate? Anybody here want to meditate better? So here's the stages that I had to go through to meditate. I've been doing 18 years. One, I believe in step by step. So my first thing was, could I sit still for 20 minutes? Like literally sit still for 20 minutes. I could think whatever, say whatever, do whatever, except for I had to sit still calmly. And that took a long time, embarrassingly. Then it was, could I be quiet and sit still for 20 minutes? And I went through this practice. Then it became, could I be quiet, sit still, and quiet my mind for 20 minutes? And then it became that quiet, sit still, clear my mind, and be aware. Then it became, could I actually transcend information, channel information? 18 years. So for me, when I wake up through this gratitude practice, I immediately go into theta meditation, which elevates my vibration and frequency internally and externally, so I can become more aware, because you only can be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than you. Earth vibrates the slowest, plants, animals, humans, sound, light, and thought. The thought that vibrates the fastest is the truth. So the higher you vibrate, the more you can find the truth, your truth. So for me, the practice of meditation is one of transcendence now. So I used to use meditation how? To unwind. Now it goes in the same gratitude practice, by the way, but now it's to transcend all that information that I access through proper sleep, giving me an elevated awareness and frequency and vibration in order to make my life easy. Because like Bob Carson said, right, when you can enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential, enjoy consistently loving what you don't like or don't love about what you love, it's not you won't work a day in your life, it's life becomes easy. It gives you the cheat codes. That's what I get every morning. Right here, then there, Nick, in the back. Hello, Joe.
Hey.
Hi, buddy. I do, always.
So I flip the hat. This is the part where I shamelessly promote the podcast that I host. It's called the You Know I'm Right podcast. We get better guests than Dave now. He's very jealous of that. He's well aware. But
I've never heard of your podcast or your guests. But if you get bigger than Cameron Diaz, then call me.
So about 2 weeks ago, the Don and Drake show reached out to us about potentially coming on and doing an interview.
Oh, that is bigger than my guests. Right. I apologize.
And walking down the hallway, little did I know that over here was the Don and Drake show, right? So in that little moment, it's called alignment, right? Meant to be here. So as you're chasing your purpose, right, and as you're focusing on attaining that alignment, right, outside of the typical happiness, momentum, that kind of changes, what are those little characteristics and qualities of your day that change as you get closer and closer to alignment?
Yeah, so several things that you said aren't necessarily how I see them, and I appreciate it. So for me, right, on my non-negotiable behavior, but I incrementally look at my day and plan and prioritize my day with activities. Activities I get paid for, not paid for, my sleep, planned and unplanned. And in this idea of alignment, I look for coincidences. So I'm looking and studying with intention. So each and every activity that I plan beyond the non-negotiables, because those are already set. They don't take any energy. I already know they're fully intentional. They're doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing aligned with where I want to be or better. Now the circumstantial behavior, I then apply that same purpose, right? I apply my why by aligning the intention of, okay, I'm coming to Melville flying with Nick. In fact, Nick and I have a new podcast that's way bigger than his. It's called The Well-Oiled Machine Podcast. And my wife thinks it's the dumbest, stupidest, most boring podcast ever. But believe it or not, it's the fastest growing podcast I've ever done. So there's a bunch of time freaks out there like me. But in the idea of the Well-Oiled Machine Podcast is it's the intention that we give things. And so like we're going to do that episode today, even here in the studio. And we go through and study today, as we did yesterday, and utilize our intention by doing, saying, thinking, feeling, believing aligned with where we want to be in the context of 24 hours. And we're going to go through yesterday where I did something I normally or haven't done in a long time, which was I got up to our studio in Orange County, which is close to the airport, to switch cars, drivers, and do what we do as far as being intentional with time, and I didn't have my wallet. And so going, and this is coincidences, so circumstantially, immediately I told my driver, drive down to my house, get back up, we'll make it by 10, 15 minutes, I know we'll be fine. So I'm already setting my intention. And then I stopped while he started driving, breathe, and I said, wait a second. Ironically, my wife is at home. Nick, because I'm on it.
He's in the middle of an interview.
Oh, right. Oh, right, I'm in the middle of the interview. So I'm muting it. Right, I like to mute like this. So if you ever see me on an interview like this, that means I'm talking to someone. And so, like, I tell Nick, call my wife, see if she can bring my wallet. Make sure my wallet's there. Have the guys at the office check my other car to see if it fell out of my pocket, because I can't believe I could be dumb enough after all these years to forget my wallet. I know I was. But the whole system didn't take very long. And literally, I got my wife in the car driving, meeting me below at the airport because I knew that. And I sent Nick ahead of me, got me lunch, all of these different things as an example of being intentional, knowing where I wanted to be or better. Where, not to say there's maybe family members or associates that I have, that their immediate reaction was, I need to change my flight. Right, that's I see it a lot, right? No, I'm gonna miss my flight. They would get on the phone, see what the next flight is, taking the red eye in this morning, which I always could have done if I wasn't able, but I had 40 minutes by the time I was through security in Orange County. So the idea of intention and coincidence more than alignment will allow you to create all these opportunities. Now, if I would have missed a flight, the other thing I do that's different now is I would have automatically said I was protected, promoted by it. And so I would have elevated my awareness to like, what was I supposed to be doing? Like, maybe it was my son, we were supposed to spend, and now I have a free afternoon to golf, and yes, I have to take the red eye, but that was the promotion in it. Instead of what other people do, punished, victimized, cancel, instead, most of you would never know that had happened. And it's cool because even the people around me weren't fazed. Nobody was panicked. My wife was grateful. It actually helped that, you know, I think a lot of times I do so much that she felt like she was my savior again. Not that that helps. Has anyone ever heard of Andy Grammer? Yeah, so there's a song, You Saved My Life. That is literally how I feel about my wife. The lyrics of that song, it's one of the most beautiful songs. So super emotional. And I was like, hey, I found this song and can you listen to it? Because this is how I feel about you. And she is like not into it at all. Like just talking to her friends. And I'm like, hey, I'm like pouring my heart out with this song. She's like, what are you on, estrogen? Like, and I'm like tearing up, you know? Like, you saved my life, you know? You stood by my side, you know? Like, didn't give a shit. All right, last question here. Hi, Nyjah.
Launching a focused tennis nonprofit. And
Sure.
Based on your experience when supporting community-based initiatives, where would you say the biggest opportunity is, what impact, and how do you build lasting support?
So this is a tennis program for youth?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and you're starting it up?
Yes.
Is it funded already?
No.
Okay. Let me help everybody with some of the best and simplest advice about starting up a charitable organization. The first step in starting a charitable organization is going and finding one that already exists that's most similar to yours. That's the first step. The first step, and because of ChatGPT and the enormous amount of searching, you'll be amazed how far along you will become, because the second step is to go volunteer, give money, work for that organization that's most similar to what you want to do. Then you're in a better position to start your own, with far greater success and support, or just support the one that already exists and make a business unit within there that is more particular and aligned, a sub of what it is. There, this isn't the zero sum game. The kindest, most generous people have difficulty receiving and asking for more. And so I know it doesn't feel as good as starting your own, but in the realm of success, statistically, you're going to be so much more successful in helping the kids, which is for the sake of what? So there's two mindsets, which is the bigger picture. And you don't have to listen to me, but all my advice is my advice. If it doesn't resonate with you, don't do it. Start your own tennis youth thing, and you doesn't mean it's not going to be successful. And these are just things that I've learned. But there's two mindsets. I'll be happy when, or for the sake of what? Those are the two mindsets. I'll be happy when I make $1 million. I'm going to make $1 million for the sake of building a community center in Africa. I'm gonna be happy when I get married. I'm going to be married to someone that does this, 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 and this for me for the sake of building the life that I want to live by finding the light, love, and lessons in somebody else. Somebody that will perfect me for the sake of. Catch yourself and ask when you're doing things like starting an organization that I will be happy when it's going to be here. Well, maybe it's already there for the sake of what you're doing it for the youth, and utilizing tennis as a vehicle to help empower youth. You know, there's nothing better than sports, in my opinion, by far, to help our youth. And so any way you want to utilize it. But I can also, before you start your own, I'll introduce you to Rick Macy, who's a really good friend of mine. I have a show with him. He's Serena and Venus's coach from King Richard. He's down in Boca. So he has one of the biggest academies and charitable organizations for youth. And he also is tied into Venus and Serena, which obviously would be a benefit to any youth program in the world, besides Roderick, Capriotti, Dave Meltzer. We finished. We can go there. Yeah.